In a year full of surprises, another huge one last Friday as President Trump was hospitalized with COVID-19. How will the potential political fallout impact the markets? Are big investors betting on a blue wave in November? What recent market activity is signaling, according to political investing strategists? And far away from the shiny lights of the mega-cap stocks, a bull market is underway for small to mid-cap companies. We go inside the charts with J.C. Peretz from All-Star Charts to find the uptrends. Plus, what you need to know about effective tax rates, our term of the week. Can you kick it? Yes, you can. So let's kick it on over to the Express. I'm your host, Caleb Silver. Here are a few big things on our radar this Monday morning. Oil prices are on the rise, breaking a multi-week trend that has kept crude futures below $40 a barrel as traders hedge the strength of the global economic recovery with a little bit of an oversupply problem. Economic indicators are showing some softness based on recent reports from the U.S. and Europe. Gold prices are also on the rise, reversing a four-week trend that has brought prices for the safety haven off of all-time highs reached in August. If you get the sense that big money is uncertain about the next few months, you are tuned into investor sentiment. Implied volatility, as measured through VIX futures, is elevated for the entire period from November 3rd through the inauguration in January. It's a relatively light week for economic reports and corporate earnings, although we will hear results from Domino's Pizza later this week. Why bring up Domino's at a time like this? Only because it's one of the top-performing stocks of the last decade, beating the likes of Apple, Tesla, and Facebook on a performance basis. While the calendar is light, all eyes are on the nation's capital, the health of the president, and for investors, the fallout for markets. For this, we turn to Greg Valliere, U.S. policy strategist for AFG Investments and someone I've been following for a very long time, for his analysis on the political landscape and how it impacts investors. There was already a ton of uncertainty, as we mentioned. Investors had said that the election was probably their number one concern, but now this has happened. Looking out over the next 4 or 5 weeks, how should individual investors process the developments that are in front of us and those that are unknown to us, given that we just don't know?
In addition to the health of the president, a huge unknown, I think there are two other things investors will have to focus on. Number one, the growing likelihood that Joe Biden is going to win. I mean, the polls over this past weekend showed Biden comfortably ahead. I think that means the Senate could fall as well. So the blue wave with the Democrats controlling everything that the markets may not like is increasingly a plausible scenario. The second thing to be concerned about is the growing chances that we could get a big stimulus bill. I think this president is so intent on winning re-election that he may offer Nancy Pelosi something that she can't refuse.
Right. So the stimulus bill has sort of gone nowhere for the past several weeks. And then we had the health scare with the president testing positive for COVID-19. Lawmakers have said on both sides that they seem far away, several trillion dollars apart. But do you think there's a likelihood that they do try to jam one in before the election to show some good faith?
I do think there's a chance that we could get a deal close to $2 trillion. The markets would like that. The markets have rallied in the last couple of weeks on news that talks have resumed. I do think at the very least there will be talks during this coming week. And I do think that Pelosi is getting tremendous pushback from her own members who want a deal. So I think the ingredients are there to get something, and it could have a very large price tag that the markets would like.
You mentioned the possibility of a blue wave in November. Time will tell, obviously, and if we get a clean election, we have to see if that actually comes to pass. But there has been a lot of concern among some investors who have watched these big mega cap tech stocks rally so heavily, and that they have benefited so much from those tax cuts back in 2017, that if Biden does win, those tax cuts are going to go away and he's going to raise taxes on corporations. How realistic do you think that might be, given the political scenario we're facing right now?
I do think there are two things that the markets have to worry about if Joe Biden wins and wins comfortably. Number one, as you suggest, higher taxes on everything, you know, corporations, estate taxes, capital gains taxes, Wall Street transaction tax, on and on and on. And number two, I could see some sectors not doing so well. The defense sector might finally see spending level off. You could have problems for financial services, healthcare, fossil fuels. So there would be some downside risk for the markets if this is a blowout for Biden.
So for individual investors, people that have been sort of investing for the long term, I'm not talking about new investors, new traders. I'm talking about folks that have been in this game a while. Everyone worries about the outcome of who's going to be the next president and how that'll impact their portfolio. But over time, it doesn't necessarily matter who's sitting in the Oval Office, but more about the construct of Congress and the leaders around the president. Is that something you believe is true?
Absolutely. Very good point. And I would say maybe the key player in Washington for the next 2 or 3 years will be neither Trump nor Biden. It'll be Jerome Powell. And I think the Fed has made it quite clear that they will do whatever is necessary to keep the economy and the markets in good shape. So I think the Fed chairman is the big positive in all of this.
We appreciate it so much. Greg Valliere, the U.S. policy strategist for AFG Investments. And again, if you're interested in following the political and economic and investing landscape, I highly recommend you follow Greg's work. Greg, thanks so much for joining the Express.
Thank you.
Well, we've heard how one political investing strategist views potential outcomes for the market based on the upcoming election. But what about investors who choose to ignore the headlines and just focus on what's happening inside the markets? That's what technical analysts do. They focus on the price. Joining us this week is our good friend JC Peretz. He's the founder of All Star Charts and one of the instructors on the Investopedia Academy. JC, welcome to the Express.
Thank you for being here, Caleb. Anything for you, always, you know that.
Well, thank you for being here since you're in my house now, but I'll come over to your house anytime. JC, no one looks at more charts than you and your team at All Star Charts. You guys literally look at thousands of charts across the entire world, across markets, across asset classes, across individual securities. What are the two or three key trends you see in the charts these days that most investors are completely ignoring right now?
For me, what's quite obvious is that a lot of the major indexes are in sideways ranges. Things like transports, industrials, small caps, like these are kind of just messy range-bound markets. The New York Stock Exchange composite, when you look around the world, you look at Europe, you look at Japan, Hang Seng, Canada, like these are just messy sideways markets. And what I think is happening is that some of the biggest winners, and let's just stick with the United States for right now, the biggest winners are smaller cap names that don't necessarily have a big impact on the indexes. So while you're seeing some digestion of gains in these massive companies that really drive these large cap market cap weighted indices, you're seeing sort of a churn in the indexes. But the truth is, underneath the surface, you've got these stealth bull markets in things like solar, consumer discretionary, technology, software, where you have mid-caps graduating to large caps, 5, 10, 20, $30 billion companies that are doing very well. A lot of direct-to-consumer things like Peloton, social media, things like Snap. I mean, we keep seeing these names coming up and they're not going to put a dent. Things like chemicals, for, you know, solar companies, these things aren't going to put a dent on the major indexes, but that doesn't mean that there's not a lot of money to be had. That's, to me, the big theme here, I think.
That's a function of the size that they're small. These are cap-weighted index. When you look at the S&P 500, you look at the NASDAQ, the mega caps move them one way or the other, one direction or the other, because they're so heavy and so large. But as you say, some of these smaller companies are doing very well, but fly under the radar because they're not the story stocks. They're not the sexy stocks you see on financial media that people like to write about. But for investors looking for opportunity, you have to look outside of the big headlines is what I'm hearing from you. You introduced me to Dow theory and the wisdom of Charles Dow when we did your technical analysis course for the Investopedia Academy. I've learned so much just reading your stuff. And you taught me why transports are such a key indicator for the overall stock market. And why is that? And what are they telling us right now? You mentioned that they're range bound. They were rallying towards the end of the summer, but now they feel kind of a little bit muddy.
Well, let's just kind of go back. You know, in the old days, in the 1800s, Charlie Dow, he was a financial journalist and he was trying in Springfield, Massachusetts, and he's trying to get information on companies and he'd knock on doors and they would say, our business is none of your business. So he's like, well, that's not going to work. So he's like, I need to figure something out. So he made a list of companies that produced the goods and then he made a list of companies that delivered those goods. And that case, in the old days, it was railroads. Ultimately, that became the Dow Jones Transportation Average, with other things like airlines and the shippers and things like that. The way he saw it is if the stocks, if the basket of stocks that make the goods are making new highs and the basket of stocks that deliver those goods are making new highs, the trend is up. And when one of them starts to fall apart, you know something's wrong. And then same thing on the downside. When they're both making new lows together, you know, it's clearly a downtrend. And when one of them is diverging from the other, like something's up. And that usually comes at turning point. So, you know, stocks are in an uptrend. This is a bull market, for those of you who are unaware. So what we're looking for are new highs in the industrials, new highs in the transports. And the transports are right there. They've done absolutely nothing for 32, 33 months. Check my math. Flat, completely flat, no movement. But that came after a monster 2016 and 2017. So a very well-deserved digestion after a monster move like that. The more times the level is tested, the more times we knock on this door that we've been knocking on for almost 3 years, I think we ultimately break out. And these are companies like the railroads, even the airlines. You want to talk about what's been holding it back, because the railroads look great, the truckers look great, FedEx, UPS, like all these names, all the logistics companies, they've been doing fantastic, and they've been held back by some of these airlines. So I think it's really important to recognize where these stocks are coming from. These are industrials. And historically, the industrial stocks, right, which all the transportation stocks are in the industrial sector. I know it can get confusing. Just stay with me here. The industrial sector of all 11 sectors in the S&P 500 is the one with the highest correlation with the S&P over time. So if you think the market overall is going higher, the S&P Industrials needs to move forward, and the transportation stocks are all in that sector. I think it's really, really important. I'll take it one step further. We argue that semiconductors are today's method of delivering goods and services, particularly America, but really all over the world. Let's be serious, right? So you can make the argument that semiconductors are today's transportation stocks in terms of delivering those goods. So I don't know the right answer. We look at both, and we see semis, you know, continuing to make new high, a lot of relative strength, all-time relative highs in semis. To me, that's all characteristic of a bull market and the type of market where we want to be looking for stocks to buy, not necessarily looking for stocks to sell. And there are plenty of stocks making new highs that look way better than the messy indexes. And I think that's our focus.
You also taught me to pay respect to Dr. Copper, the most useful of all the industrial metals. What is the good doctor telling us now? We know there was strength, a little bit of flattening, but what are you seeing?
What I'm seeing is that commercial hedgers have on their largest net short position ever in copper. Check my math. It might not be the, I think it's the largest. If not, it's right there, but I'm pretty sure it's officially the largest net short position ever. And then meanwhile, in the US dollar, commercial hedgers are actually net long. When they're never net long, they have historic net short positions in euro and pretty extreme positions in yen also. So what does that mean for the average investor? What that means is that right now, there's a huge rubber band that's really stretched in positioning at the institutional level that needs unwinding. It doesn't necessarily mean copper is going to get slaughtered, although it is getting slaughtered today. It doesn't mean the dollar is going to rip. It means that there needs to be an unwind of this sentiment. And just think about, why is copper so important? You know why? It looks exactly like the emerging markets index. You know, it looks exactly like Caterpillar. It looks exactly like John Deere. Like, overlay those four charts and take out the y-axis, and you won't be able to know which one's which, right? They all look exactly the same. So think about the global implications of this unwind that needs to take place. I mean, that's the bet that we're making, is that unwind needs to take place. So I don't know whether it's going to be through price correction or through time or a combination of the two, but that's the current situation.
And you recently, JC, earned your sommelier license. So congratulations.
Thank you.
I want to know, now that we're in October, what's your go-to wine for those chilly October nights when we're starting to get the fires going, we're eating a nice hot meal, and we've got maybe the Afghan or the blanket on us outside?
What are we eating? We're getting, I know you.
How about a good fowl, a good roast chicken, or maybe some turkey, or just a good fowl, roasted vegetables, maybe a salad?
If we're going to go that route, then we're going to do a Pinot Noir, something from the Côte d'Or, like a Côte de Beaune, a Côte de Nuit would be lovely for something like that. Ugh. But, you know, if you're going to go bigger, if you're going to go pasta bolognese, you know, some meatballs, right? Like, you know, you really want to get down and dirty, you're going to get that Barolo, baby. You're going to get a nice the youngest 2013 Barolo. Hope, you know, preferably if you can get something a little older, even better. But man, a nice like Barolo that's been laid down. And you know, if you can't get the Barolo, you don't want to spend that much, get yourself a nice Barbaresco. You'll be just fine.
Yeah, you're now in the upper part of the shelf, but I do have a birthday coming up at the end of the month. And I do intend to have that big pasta bolognese with a nice Deep Barolo. So thank you for the recommendation. I got to go out with this. What's your favorite charting pattern? You know them all. You are a black belt in charting. Which one just satisfies you the most, or is the one you're kind of more partial to right now?
I like it when price goes from the lower left to the upper right. Those are the stocks I like to buy.
The left to right chart. Very good. JC Peretz, always a pleasure. He's the founder of All Star Charts, a good friend of Investopedia, and a great follow, folks. If you want to continue to learn more, follow JC, sign up for his newsletters. I'm always learning from you, and I appreciate your time, and congratulations on fatherhood. You got a beautiful baby.
Thank you, Caleb. Anything for you, anytime, whatever you want.
It's terminology time. Time for us to get smart on a financial or investing term that we should familiarize ourselves with in the week ahead. This week's term, the effective tax rate. Now, I'm no accountant, but my favorite website defines the effective tax rate as the percent of income that an individual or corporation pays in taxes. The effective tax rate for a corporation is the average rate at which its pre-tax profits are taxed. Why is the effective tax rate our term for the week? Well, as the election gets closer and investors try to handicap who will win, the effective tax rates corporations pay is key to their future profits. Remember, the Trump administration passed a major tax cut in 2017 that lowered the corporate tax rate for U.S. companies to 21% from 29%. For some companies, particularly the mega-cap technology companies, that tax cut, in addition to other tax breaks they avail themselves of, has reduced their effective tax rates to as low as 10% for the likes of Microsoft and 13% for Alphabet, Google's parent company. Lower taxes equals higher profits, and stocks are valued on their future profitability. Vice President Joe Biden, the Democratic presidential nominee, has proposed raising the corporate tax rate to 28% from 21%, imposing a new minimum tax on U.S. companies, and increasing taxes on foreign income for many U.S.-based multinationals. Now, we have no idea who's going to be the next U.S. president, but it's safe to say that the effective tax rate will be among the key factors investors will be focused on until we do. And until we talk again, stay safe, stay smart, and stay kind. Thanks for listening. If you haven't already, please rate, review, and recommend this podcast if you liked it, and send us some feedback. I'm Caleb Silver, and thanks for joining me on the Investopedia Express. Have a great week.